Blog Talk Radio.
Obviously, none of our clips are working. I don't know if anyone can hear anything I was just trying to play, but welcome into the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. I'm Kate Moser. There it is. Well, that started off real well. Once again, I'm James Boger. You're in the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. We've got a couple weeks, and obviously it's not gotten any better at our craft at this point in time. lots happened since we last checked in with everybody. Once again, we are presented by Laxdirt.com. I'm going to welcome in Tom Bovey. And, Tom, this is the most exciting time of the year for 98% of people who really want to get into this league because, A, the playoffs are set. We know who's in. We know who's out. B, we got a couple interesting moves as far as front office is concerned. I do want to touch on Coach Cottle retiring or stepping away from the team at some point in time. We do have Mike Bocklet coming on here in about 10 minutes. We got Kieran McArdle coming on at about 9 o'clock. We're going to be with you guys for the full 90 minutes. And first off, Tom, we have not really had the chance to talk about really the playoff race. We took a couple weeks off. I think we both had a lot of stuff going on. The season obviously was a little too exciting for us to condense into, you know, a 60 or 90-minute show. And now that everything's kind of settled, the first thing I want to ask you about is what surprised you the most with this season? Because in the beginning of the season, I'm going to keep on preaching about this because me and my man Scott Ratliff keep on talking about the fact that you were so down on Boston and they're in the playoffs now. Not only in the playoffs, but they're a viable seeding team. Is Boston your biggest surprise heading into this postseason, or do you think it might be a New York team? Kind of what surprised you the most?
Well, you know, I love that you bring up those bets. That actually makes this whole show that much better for me because if I would be raking in my money if we had placed these bets in Vegas and they would be redoing a room with your money. So I'm not too concerned about my bet on Boston. I love the fact that they stepped it up and have shown that they were far better than I ever thought they would be. And they've done incredible things this season. Well beyond my expectations, and that's terrific. Biggest surprise this season, I mean, there's a number of them. Boston is a huge surprise. They're a playoff team. It couldn't go any better for them than having to go into New York to face Mr. Paul Rabil in the playoffs and have that situation play out in this way. They're going to have to beat their old superstar in order to make the championship game. We got to see one of the best games of the year this past weekend as Ohio and Boston squared off in a very, very back-and-forth matchup. Mike Bocklet coming on, it was an incredible out-of-nowhere star. We'll talk about that more when he comes on. But, I mean, we're seeing the passing of the torch. Jesse Schwartzman announces his retirement over the weekend. I've been watching games for years. I remember the games when they were on at 3 o'clock in the morning on ESPN. It was the game of the week. You got to see one game a week if you were lucky, if you didn't live in a market. And I mean, I remember all the good things about the league and all the things that have happened. And I don't remember what the league was like without Jesse Schwartzman. He is just a polarizing figure. He is the Denver Outlaws. I mean, when you think of that team, you think of him. And, you know, as sad as it is, I've traveled to a lot of MLL games and done a lot of MLL events. And you know what? He's been at most of them. You know, championship weekends when you go, he was there. World games, he was there. All-star games, he was there. You and I went to an Ohio-Denver game this year. I went out to a game in Denver. It's just going to be weird seeing Denver next season without him because that's just odd. And Coach Cottle, I mean, he wasn't around for that long. He's been the coach since, I believe, 2012. They won the title in 11, 13, and 14. And 10, they won the title in 10, 12 and 13. I think he's been the coach since 11. And, I mean, he reshaped the league. He changed things around. He kind of gave the league some legitimacy in a big-time coaching name. So it's a huge deal for him to step into a front office role for that team and not be on the sideline anymore. Coach Cottle is one of the smartest men in lacrosse. You know, I think we're going to see a number of players walk away. And, you know, we already saw them. We saw him retire Lee Zink's number over the weekend. And, that, you know, that was another mainstay, longtime player. And, you know, I don't know how many seasons like a Brody Merrill or John Grant Jr. have left. I'm assuming we saw the last of Casey Powell. It was talked about numerous times. I mean, you're talking big, big, big name players that are going to walk away from this game. But the beauty of it is we've had so many young players step in and go bonkers and just take over. And, you know, we had a number of second-year players this year that were in the races for different conversations. And that's not including a guy like Mike Bachlett, who isn't technically a rookie, I guess he's a first-year player if you want to look at it that way. But he's not a young guy. And, you know, he led Denver in scoring this year. Karen McArdle led Florida this year. We've got a number of young players taking huge roles for their team. And it's just exciting. And expansion is happening. It's not a myth. It's not anything. We've seen every single sign point to it. Coaches openly talking about it on the conference call and in interviews. It's happening, and it's going to change this league. This could be the best offseason in 15 years, and I'm just pumped about all this stuff. And yet, we still have a championship. So the biggest story of the season is still to be had. And yet, in a way, many people are looking forward to the offseason. But I'm interested to see what these guys think and how they feel this playoff is going to shake out.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing to me now, before we get into playoff matchups, because I think whenever we welcome in Mike Bachlett, I kind of want to just stick on the Denver Outlaws. But can you imagine, the one thing I do want to ask him about is exactly the transition of this team. Because you mentioned the fact that Lee Zink is gone. Schwartzman is going to retire. You broke the story on the conference call, no matter what anyone tells me otherwise, that Anthony Kelly is not going to be a part of this team. He's looking to hop onto a contender, which just to me signals the fact that he is not going to be long for this league. And this is going to be a team in complete and utter roster realignment, especially with the expansion. And that's the most interesting thing about this league right now, Tom. It is the expansion and what a team like Denver is able to do, because they still have a lot of viable pieces. I mean, besides someone who, like Mike Bachlett, who led the team in scoring, you still have guys like Jeremy Stevers. You still have got guys like Chris Bachlett. You got a lot of players on this team that you can still build off of. When you think about Denver Outlaws, not right now, but say 6 months from now, what do you see? Because right now it seems like this is a team that can have a huge roster turnover, and it's going to be completely different from now on with this team, even though they're kind of one of the teams in this league that was able to kind of reload. So what do you make of exactly where this team's going to be going moving forward?
You know, they still have a lot of young talent. They're kind of one of those teams. They won the championship last season with a number of veteran players and guys that have been, you know, it seemed like they had a lot of guys that were 10 years or better, or 6, 7 years or better, or like first or second year guys. And they still have a lot of that. But when you have a core of now Mike Bachlett, Drew Snyder, Jeremy Sieverts, Chris Bachlett, hopefully Eric Law is able to come back from what I'm guessing is a pretty severe foot injury. And they still have a number of players. They have a lot of work to do on defense. That was probably their biggest downfall this season, was the defense took a hit with the loss of their longtime captain and the guy who was the best defender in the league. So how they recover from that is going to be an interesting situation. But this team still has everything they need.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch this team move forward. And with that being said, I do want to welcome in Michael Bachlett to the show. And Mike, first off, from top of myself, congratulations on a great year from you. I mean, how's it going tonight?
It's good. It's good. I appreciate that. Thank you. It was unfortunate, you know, that we weren't able to make the playoffs this year. But for me personally, just to kind of jump into the league and have the year that I did, it was phenomenal. It was a great feeling.
Now, the first question I wanted to ask you is kind of,
sure.
It kind of alludes to what you were just saying, just the fact that, like, now you guys are eliminated. At what point in time do you allow yourself to kind of reflect on a year where you kind of came in as an unheralded player and you were able to lead the team that was defending a championship and scoring? At what point in time do you kind of take a step back and just kind of go, wow, that was kind of a cool ride, and kind of reflect on individual accomplishments?
Yeah, I think you know what? I actually flew back this morning from Denver back to New York, where I live, and I think the first time I actually did that was on the flight back. Just kind of had talked to my wife before I'd taken off, and she just kind of said the same thing. She was like, "Wow, I can't believe you led the team," and it just got me thinking, and just what an incredible just opportunity I had, and to be able to kind of take advantage of my time on the field. And, you know, sometimes in this league too, it's just, it's timing. And, you know, you got great players like an Eric Law who happens to hurt his foot and creates a window. And, you know, you just kind of have to take advantage of those opportunities. And it really is amazing the way it ended. And I couldn't be more happy for the opportunity, like I said, and to play with my brothers, and that what a great organization and team, and to end the season with a big win, it meant a lot.
And once again, you're leading me into all these questions, which is awesome, but playing with your brothers for the entire season, kind of having the fact that you guys obviously have played lacrosse with each other since you guys were, I mean, as tiny as you could possibly be. How fun was it to be able to kind of experience that full season with you on the roster? Because, like I said, it wasn't a sure thing that you were on there, but now that you've been there the full season and had the impact that you have, you're going to be a player for this team for a long time coming, along with the people that you're probably closest to in the world. How fun is that, knowing that you guys are going to be the core of this team moving forward?
Well, it's phenomenal. Those guys, Matt and Chris, obviously have done amazing things with the organization. They've taken great care of them, and, you know, to get the championship last year, watching them do that, and all the support from the city, it's amazing. It's a great organization, and to kind of step in there, and like you said, it's you know, in the beginning, it was just kind of, okay, here I am. And then just to kind of really step into a role, especially down the stretch of the season, and, you know, get some good quality wins and do some great things on offense. And then to really wrap it up, and the coaches are like, well, are you going to play next year? I would never have thought coming in, I'm just trying to play in some games. And then at the end of the year, a coach is asking if you're up for another one. And that's the best. I mean, I couldn't ask for anything more. I'm excited to I got to talk to the wife, but excited to get another year in and hopefully just keep going where we left off.
Well, last one for me, and I'll toss you over to Tom, and this is going to be a little bit of a bragging rights thing. have your brothers kind of made fun of you a little bit about the fact that, you know, they won it all before you got there, and, you know, maybe like as a brotherly jab, they're like, you got to get to the team, and all of a sudden we don't make the playoffs, you know, it's on you for Thanksgiving dinner, like you're doing all the dishes or something.
Yeah, you know what, they've been pretty good about it. They haven't really mentioned it, but I think I was the first one to bring it up. Kind of like, man, you know, I'm excited to be here, but my first year in, it's real fun, but from a team perspective, it's kind of like it's the worst year the organization has had. So it's, you know, it's bittersweet. And to be honest, I hope I can just keep going where I left off, play with these guys, and then next year turn it around. I think, you know, we were right there in the end. I think we just missed a few pieces in a few games, and everybody knows that next year is a whole new year, and we still have all the guys, all the names that it takes to win the championship that were with us last year. And I'm excited to hopefully add to it and make another push next year.
Hey, Mike, it's Tom.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Real good. Is it just a dream? You know, every broadcast, every Outlaws game, they said, you know, they told your story. This guy came in on an open tryout. He's not supposed to be here. He's not supposed to do these things.
Right.
James and I were at the first Ohio game early in the season where you scored the game-winning goal, and you end the season with the game-winning play. Obviously it didn't end the way you wanted, but is it still
right.
the same season for you?
I mean, for me, you know, if you want to get selfish and personally, it was more than I could ever imagine, to be honest. You know, my goals going into it were, I went to that open training, was, hey, just, you know, play, hopefully get on the roster. You know, it'd be great if I could play one game with the brothers. And then it kind of went from that to, hey, you know, now you're here, don't be satisfied with, okay, you played one game, make an impact. And then from there, it just kept going. And, it's been amazing. And it's, you know, dream come true playing with Matt and Chris. And, you know, again, selfishly, it was phenomenal. Unfortunately, from a team perspective, it wasn't, you know, what we wanted. But I think, you know, this last game this past weekend said a lot about us. And we're ready to get it going again next year.
I'm going to jump in on that. And
sure.
Expansion is the
right.
secret in the league. Everybody kind of knows what's going on.
Right.
We've already seen that there's a team name out there for one of the teams. What happens next year if you're all on different teams?
You know, it's probably pretty realistic. The teams can protect who they can protect, and, you know, for expansion reasons and for good reason, because they want these teams to be competitive, they limit the number that they can protect. I don't know what the chances of the three of us playing together. You know, Matt lives in Denver, so for him, I think it's he's playing with Denver. He's not playing. He loved it there, and that's his team. For the Chris and I hope we can play again on Denver's roster. That's the ultimate goal. But, you know, other teams are going to make their picks, and we'll see what happens. But hopefully we'll be in the same place next year.
And back to Denver again, Schwartzman retires, announces it before the last game. I know it's your first year with the team, but, you know, you've been a part of the team for a few seasons, at least family-wise.
Right.
How do you even dream of replacing that?
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate enough to meet Jesse when Matt and him played together at Hopkins in Matt's first year, and they won a national championship, and so I got to know him then, and carrying over into this season and being able to play with him. And, you know, like you said, years before, I'd been around the team, and he's one of a kind, Jesse. And I think the confidence he carries puts confidence in the players around him. And, you know, his records and accolades speak for themselves. It's definitely going to be a hard spot to fill. I don't think you can ever fill it to the same expectation, but you can just try to find the guy that, you know, will come in and make some nice saves and be a team player just like Jesse was. And I think we've got some guys in the roster in the goalie position that got to see him in action for a few years and kind of see the personality and the commitment and the leadership in the locker room. And hopefully they can take that and build from it and try to fill that void that's going to be tough to fill. But, you know, it was a great way to go out for him with the win. And, you know, he's the all-time best, and he will be forever. So, it's you know, it's a good way to go.
And Denver season's over now.
Yep.
So we're going to have you do the college football analyst thing where they bring in the guy whose season's over. And give me your weekend preview, how you think this weekend is going to go with Ohio or Rochester traveling to Ohio and Boston heading up to New York.
Right. Yeah, you know, I've been looking at it, and I think the hometown teams are definitely the favorite. I hate to go just, you know, lock in the 1 and 2, but Ohio is just hot right now. They had a close game with Boston this past weekend, but they've got, I think, momentum. Momentum's huge towards the end of the season. They've got a ton of it, and they've got a real deep roster of plenty of guys to give the ball to. So I think Ohio, It's going to be a hard team to beat all the way through. And then, of course, New York, you know, we were able to get them this weekend, which I think was more – it wasn't because of a lack of energy on their part by any means. I think for us it was just, you know, an all-out at-home end of the season, let's do this attitude. And that game could have gone either way easily. And I think they just – they have so many great players. They have the two best specialists in the goal and at the X. And what they do and everything else they fill in – it's going to be really hard to beat them, especially at home. So I think New York and Ohio are going to be the two to push on to the championship, and that's just going to be a great battle.
And all right, I don't disagree with you. That's who's the favorite? We've seen New York go 2-4 in their last six games. We've shown some weakness. Ohio has done the opposite. They've come on as of late. We're kind of notorious for our bets at Laxter. So who are you taking to win it all?
Man, putting on the spot. I just feel, I think I like Ohio right now, to be honest. I think from all the games, Boston is an incredible team. They came in, they're fast, they're young. That was one of the only games we played this year, the second time around, that I was like, wow, they have speed that just kills, transition that just kills. But Ohio was able to match it, and it's brought some, you know, high-scoring games, and they've got great defense. So Ohio is my favorite right now. But, you know, even with New York's late record, those guys, just a bunch of veterans. And I know that they've got the all-name team, but I think those are all guys that in the big games all come to play. That's why they have all the names and, you know, the USA guys, because that's what they do. They're known for it. They did it in college, and we're going to see it again. But I'll pick Ohio for the champ.
All right. Interesting pick. I like it.
Yeah.
I think I would have liked it no matter which of the four teams you picked.
I think the best part is, and I think, I mean, all four teams bring a different level, you know, something different. Like I said, New York, you have the best specialties. I mean, you have the best goalie and the best faceoff guy, and then you have endless list of names with Pinnell, Rabel, Marasco, Kroc. You just could go on and on. Boston, I just love the young speed. Rochester, the same thing. But I don't know. Ohio, I think, just has a group that is playing very well together right now. And for that reason, that's why I'm going to go with them.
Well, Mike, tell you what. I'm actually going to finish you off real quick. I know Tom. Tom and you talked about a lot of stuff, and before you take my position and have to deal with Tom on a week-in, week-out basis, which seems fun at first, but then you get in the nitty-gritty of everything, and so he's a little bit more difficult to deal with. What are your off-season plans? Like, I know that you probably have a lot of stuff going on. What's your plan starting, I guess, today, leading into next season? What are you up to?
A lot of family action. My wife and I, we have a one-year-old daughter, and she's pregnant again. So a lot of family stuff that we'll be doing. But I also – I coach at the college level, Division III school in New York, SUNY School, Purchase College. And we're a brand-new program starting next year. So I've got my first group of recruits coming in this fall, and we're going to be doing a lot of training, a lot of practice to try to get competitive in our first season next spring.
Well, that sounds awesome. I mean, it can't hurt the fact that you can say that you were the leading point scorer for the defending champion Denver Outlaws. I'm sure that hurt the recruiting pitch at any point in time. We're gonna let you go. Tell your wife some congratulations and same to you. Hopefully
I appreciate
she allows you to travel back and forth between Denver next year, wherever your travels might take you. And like I said, man, we really appreciate you having me on, and hopefully everything goes well for you this summer.
Thanks, guys. I hope we'll see what happens with this playoff race, but it's going to be good either way, I think.
I think so, too. And like I said, man, hey, you can't keep on giving good insight. You're going to take my job immediately. So I need you to tone that back just a little bit, all right?
All right. I like it. All right, guys. Well, have a good night.
Hey, man, you too. Once again, it's Mike Bockley of the Denver Outlaws, and really appreciate having him on. And, Tom, there's a lot of stuff to draw off that because you can tell that it's interesting. And the thing I want to lead into off that interview is the fact that you're right. I mean, it's so amazing that it's just this uncovered secret about expansion. And you heard Mike mention it. It's just the fact that all these teams know that the rosters could be jumbled in 1,000 different ways. And I think before we talk about the playoffs, which is obviously the most pressing thing, I want to talk about this because I think this is the most interesting thing we have going in. It's just the fact that we know they're going to be probably 2 expansion teams, and all these players, just it's an open secret. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this in this league, and kind of how do you expect this whole thing to shake out?
I'm 99.9% sure that we're going to see 2 expansion teams. I'm pretty sure we're going to see 1 in Houston. I know we're going to see 1 in Atlanta. I just think that's going to be the way things shake out. We'll see teams be able to protect 13 players regardless of position. At least I've heard that rumor, which is actually the truth. But I just, you know, teams are going to have to pick 13 players to keep. So you get to keep more or less your starters. If you include a specialist and a long stick, that's your starters. But I mean, you're not keeping multiple short stick defenders if you're keeping your full midfield line. You're not keeping any backup midfielders. I mean, you got 10 starters on the team. You got your faceoff guy. You got your LSM, and you got 1 short stick defender. So it's not even your full starting defense if you keep your full starting offense. Teams are going to have to choose. Everybody that was a backup in this league this year, you know, rosters are 25 men, but only 19 guys dressed for a game. Almost every one of those players is going to find a starting spot next year at the beginning of the year. It's going to be a shuffling of players, but the talent level is so deep right now, and there's so many players going on, and so much available that it's not going to affect the product at all. I've watched every game for the last several seasons, and it doesn't hurt the product at all.
No, not only that, but whenever you see a player like Mike come out of nowhere and lead a defending champion team in scoring, you got to know at that point in time you're going to have enough to do an expansion. The interesting thing is going to be for a team that plans for the future, a team like, I mean, obviously my whole thing is going to be going towards Charlotte, but a team that tried to stack up on youthful talent, at some point in time you've got to quickly evaluate who you want, who you don't want. That's going to make this summer, like you said earlier, it's going to make this summer the most interesting summer in recent memory, and we haven't even gotten to the playoffs. And that's the next thing I want to jump into, Tom, because I want to get your predictions a lot later on when we interview Kieran, because Kieran McArdle is going to come on here about 30 minutes or so. But I do want to talk about the matchups, because I think the matchups are the most interesting part of this entire process, because you do have the dichotomy of a couple teams and how they play. I do want to get your first take on just on exactly how you view the different styles of these 4 teams as they face off against each other. What are you looking for, and what are going to be the keys to a couple teams to actually pull off maybe a little upset on the road?
Well, we'll start with the road teams then. Rochester plays a very interesting 2-man style, but they can also attack many different ways. They've got a dynamic offense. Jordan Wolf should be one of the favorites for MVP. We did the fan vote or the player poll on the website for laxdirt.com, and I polled roughly 40 players and got who they thought. Greg Renning was the runaway, but I think the coaches are going to lean towards an offensive player. I had one coach tell me that he would never vote for a guy who doesn't play any offense or any defense. I don't know that I agree with that. I think I somewhat agree with the players. But Jordan Wolf is going to garner some of the coaches' votes and the GM's votes. And he's been terrific all season, and when he's on, he's fantastic. And Jordan McIntosh, second on the team in points, came out of nowhere this season. I've said it for a couple of years. He plays a different style indoor than he does outdoor, and we finally saw him bring some of his indoor moves to the outdoor game this season, and he's really thriving in a dynamic role, and he's become almost impossible to stop. He's got so many rolls and moves and stick fakes and can pass into such small windows that it's incredible to watch. And this team just has a very dynamic offense. On defense, they live by the takeaway. John Lade, John Nicasio, Joel White are guys that have incredible stick skills. They just find ways to get their sticks into passing lanes, passes, knock down shots, get the ball away from you, and figure out a way to get it back up. Their weakness is on-ball defense. They lost Mike Manley, the reigning defensive player of the year. It's not a guy you just, okay, grab that guy instead. You know, you just don't do that. You don't replace the best defender on your team, one of the best defenders in the league, quickly and easily. It hasn't happened yet. They've struggled in that situation. And Florida really exploited it this past weekend in that, you know, they're a team that you can get points on. So they're going to have to figure out a way how to stop them, other teams from scoring. They're going to have to figure out a way to win in shootouts. They're going to have to get, you know, their secondary players, Kevin Rice, John Rannigan, Mark Matthews, Randy Stotts, going. They're going to have to find a way to score a lot of goals, I think, to win in the playoffs this season. And they're playing teams that have very good defenses. And, you know, I'm a big Galloway fan, and when he's clapping his hands on the defensive end, Rochester is rolling. So we're going to need to see him do that a whole lot, because that means he's making key stops in key situations and getting the ball upfield in a hurry, and he's leading with that emotion. So Rochester has weaknesses, but they also have a strength in their offense. Boston is very different, almost completely different than Rochester. Boston wins when they run and when they play with fire. When they play with emotion and energy and rhythm and end-to-end, and, you know, run-and-gun style lacrosse, you shoot at us, we shoot at you, they are so dangerous, because I don't think any team in this league keeps up with them. You know, if we did a relay race, I think they would win it by quite a bit. They are so fast, so athletic. The trouble is once they get the ball in the settled situation, they can't find ways to score on a consistent basis. Boston is so good in transition, it's almost embarrassing the difference between their transition offense and their 6-on-6 offense. Now, they were better this past week. I think they found a way to make it work this past week. But at the same time, this season, that has not been a strength for this team. They need to find a way to make that happen. They need to not become Will Manny or Max Seabold only on offense. When they settle into 6-on-6, the ball goes into Manny's stick or the ball goes into Seabold's stick, and Manny makes a move and tries to find a cutter, or Seabold dodges down the alley and tries to find a shot. They need to figure out a way to make that system work. But when Scott Ratliff or Josh Hawkins has the ball coming down the field, this team is dangerous. And their defense, you know what, they're as good as any team in this league. Chad Wiedmeyer has been a revelation for this team. He was kind of a gift from Ohio, and he's come in and been a top five, top six defender in the league this year. He just guards whoever you tell him to and does a good job of it. He might not make every single play. He doesn't have, Joe Fletcher's all-around game, but he's as good or better of a defender than most guys in this league, and he's really, really done well for this team. So Boston's weakness is going to be finding a way to make plays on offense. And, you know, Ryan Young coming from behind the goal just isn't working for me this year, and it isn't working for him either. He's got 9 points in 10 games. They need to find something better than that. If your third attackman isn't a big part of your team, you're not going to win a championship in this league. You need every single player on your offense to contribute.
Well, one thing I did want to focus on is the fact that, A, initially throughout the course of the season, And this is not, believe me, this is not to call you out, but this is to call out every lacrosse writer on the planet who thought New York was going to go undefeated and beat everybody by 8 goals. Right now, New York seems like they're a little bit more vulnerable, but then again, this is kind of a new season. This is where the regular season ends and records be damned. Everything kind of starts from scratch. So my big question is the fact that we talked to Mike just a second ago, and he didn't mention New York in the first – that New York was literally the fourth team that he mentioned. And so that, to me, signals the fact that there could be a vulnerability in the Lizards that a lot of people aren't seeing, even though preseason, midseason, and about until, I guess, I mean, 2 months ago, we thought this team was unbeatable. What do you make of what the Lizards are doing, and how do you really think that they stack up right now, considering that they've kind of fallen off the planet a little bit?
Falling off the planet is a heck of a stretch. I'm going to point to one player, and it's a player who I'm not a huge fan of, and I'm slightly biased against, and we'll go from there. But Paul Rabil. Early in the season, and when things are rolling for this team, when they were needing to win games, they could hitch the horse to that wagon, or hitch the wagon to that horse, I guess is a better term, but they could put it on him and he would get it done. Early in the season, he was having 5- and 7-point games and 6-point games. And the last couple of weeks, the last two losses, he's got 4 points and 2 points. And not just that, but against Ohio in their loss, he was just kind of firing at will. And, you know, they need him to step into that role. And I'm not in the locker room. I get to make snap judgments from the film and say what my opinion is and have no repercussions for that. I have that advantage. But to me, it feels like the gas pedal wasn't to the floor after the playoffs were locked up. I just think that the superstars on New York's roster didn't really focus on killing themselves to win every game after that happened, because they didn't need to. They were going to be at home. They were going to get a playoff game. They've already proved by starting 8-0 that they're the best team in the league, and we don't really need to die over 2 more wins or 3 more wins. So I just think this team lost focus. I think they really gave up at halftime this past week against Denver. Denver made some plays. There were some questionable calls by officials, and Denver did very, very well and lit it up. But New York went into the locker room with a 5-goal lead, and they didn't come out firing on all cylinders. They didn't come out running and gunning. They didn't come out with that cutthroat, beat you down attitude. They came out with, well, let's go out of here with a win. And by the time they were able to panic and try to get started again, Denver tied the game and scored in overtime to win. So I just think we're going to see a different New York team than we've seen the last 6 weeks of the season. I think the attitude's going to be better. I think they're going to have that killer instinct because, you know, Chesapeake was a team for years. They won 3 titles in 4 years. And during the regular season, we always wondered what the heck they were doing. Why was this team not front-running? Why was this team not the top team in the league? Why were they not winning every single week and going crazy? And it was because the team was built for the playoffs. And I think Mike Bocklet had a great point. And this team is built with guys that are going to step up when the game matters the most. And they're going to do their best and show you what they're made of when the game matters the most. And that's what I think we're going to see out of New York, is see them light it up in the playoffs, because this is important. Every one of these guys wants a championship. You've got a ton of Team USA guys out there wearing silver medals, wishing they had gold medals, thinking about having gold medals, and they want a title. You know, they've got a few guys on this team that got a lot of rings, and I guarantee Brian Spolina is showing them guys and saying to them guys, we need to be better than this to win a championship. We need to do better than this to win a championship. He knows what it takes to win a championship. Not many of the other guys in this locker room do, and they need to rally behind each other and get things going, because you know what? I talked to Coach Spolina today, and I told him, you got me nervous, Coach. I don't think you're the favorite anymore.
Yeah, I don't think they're the favorite. I don't think it's even close, Tom. I think the fact that what you were just saying is the most dangerous thing you could ever say about a team heading into a playoff situation is they need to turn it back on because they had it on. Anyone can talk about the Rabel injury as much as they want. Like, he's obviously a huge part of their team, and that's not to be disputed by anybody. But at the same time, like, you can't tell me the fact that the rest of that team isn't good enough to win a game. I mean, you can't. You cannot convince me that that's the case. But the fact that team let off the gas, it's tough to put the gas back on, especially right now. And so my thing is, like, I can't consider them the front runner. I can't consider them even, like, they might be the third team I would pick to win at this point because I just don't know what you're going to get out of them. Because you're right, they've got a lot of accomplished players. How much does this matter is my big question. Like, how much does this championship matter to the players that really mean a lot? I don't know, because I think Ohio is hungrier than they are. I think Ohio is the bygone champion because I think Ohio is hungry. I think Ohio's playing right. I think Ohio has all the momentum, and I just don't think that New York now is this crowned champion that we anointed them with 6 months ago. We thought, like, you and I both did this. We both thought they were just going to have a crown bestowed upon their head, and now it's not going to happen. And I just, my question to you now, Tom, is just the fact that, like, Ohio versus New York, which team do you take? Because for me, it's 100% Ohio, and I can't figure out why anyone wants to hop all their cards on the New York bandwagon now.
Well, Ohio needed to win their last three to show who they were, and they did. I mean, they beat Boston twice, and they beat New York once. So you're talking about a team going into the playoffs on a three-game win streak against two of the other three playoff teams. You could not put them in a better situation. They're confident. They know what they can do. They know what they can't do. They've got a lot of wins this season. They've won a lot of different ways. They've won with offense. They've won with defense. They've won shootouts. They've won slowdown games. They're a dangerous team right now. You take Paul Rabel off any team, they're going to be a different team. So for them to lose the two games when he was away, I'm not going to say injury because that's BS. When he took two games off, they lost the two games, and that's going to happen to anybody, because while the talent level is still incredibly high on New York without him, the dynamic is different. You've lost a player who was a main part of your attack, the way you play the game, the way you move the ball, the way you go at the goal. So yeah, I get that. To lose these last two is a bit inexcusable in my part, because the foot did come off the gas. I don't care what you say. You can say whatever you want about how you played or what happened or this or that, or make a million excuses. But New York should have put a knockout punch into Denver this past weekend and showed everybody that, you know what, we're here. We're ready for the playoffs. Come into our house and show us what you can do. And they may very well do that to Boston this coming weekend. But at the same time, if you are that champion, if you are going to be the king bee of the league, if you're going to be Muhammad Ali and stand there and talk about how great your roster is, how great you've been all season, how you have so much depth, so much talent, the face-off guy, the goalie, the best midfielder in the world, the leading scorer in the league on attack, the best defender in the league, which they, you know, those conversations are very easy to be had. If you wanted to say New York has the best player at every position, except for maybe short stick defense, but if you defender, midfield, attack, goalie, faceoff, that's an easy conversation to have because they've backed it up. But at the same time, if you want to be that guy, you cannot give your opponent any confidence. And Ohio and now Boston are going into this playoff with a ton of confidence. I know Boston has lost their last – they lost both games to Ohio in kind of not ugly fashion, but not good fashion. This last one, they blew a lead and they lost late. But Ohio and Boston are going in to this looking for blood and thinking they can have it, whereas at week 8 or week 9 or whatever it was, when New York was sitting at 8-0, they didn't have any confidence. Nobody had confidence to beat them. But when you lose to Charlotte, then you lose to Florida, and now you drop your last two, your opponents have all the confidence they're ever going to need.
And you know what? Like, it's, you mentioned the fact about, I mean, New York does have the best paper team that we've seen. And they do have the best paper person at a certain position.
Don't skew the facts. I think Ohio is great. I think they're still a talented team. But nobody in their right mind should want to play New York. Nobody should want to go into that house and play that team. Because if you get the best New York team, if New York gives you their best shot, there's no touching them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not saying – I just think that right now Ohio is the team that is playing the best, that – in general, when you see the play of two teams, no matter what the talent on the roster dictates, at some point in time, you got to look at how they're playing. And that's about it. And that's really all. Like, I think in a one-on-one matchup, New York versus Ohio, New York wins probably 6 times out of 10. It's just too bad the fact that the game is played one time and that's it. In Atlanta in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, wherever it is. But that's kind of the thing. And the thing I really want to jump into with you, Tom, is the fact that Boston is the most interesting team to me that we've seen in a long time. And there are a couple reasons why. And there's a couple reasons why I think that they're a team that we all need to watch out for, because I think they're doing something a little bit different. And the reason why I say that is the fact that you saw a lot of analytics go into a lot of other sports. You've seen analytics get into baseball to the point where you're able to do defensive shifts, which might be outlawed at some point because they don't want run support, whatever. But you also see in basketball, the Warriors take the most high percentage shots. And Boston, to me, is now that team. They're the Golden State Warriors of the MLL. And I say this because, number one, their two-point goal scoring is 7 goals higher than everybody else. They play that high-tempo game. And I just want to know from you, do you think that's something to watch? Because I don't know if it's like an analytics question now. I think that might be the way this team is structured. But at the same time, they have had success being a fast team. You heard Mike talk about it earlier, that they are a team that plays fast, they're super athletic, and they're kind of the new age Denver Outlaws. And so is that a trend, Tom? Is that something that we can see going forward, is my big question.
Yeah, I don't know, because – In my mind, watching Boston play, they're only taking two-point shots in two situations. A, on a fast break in transition when they're not slid to. When the point man bumps over, their guys have that green light to fire the two. They didn't take nearly as many in six-on-six situations. Or early in the shot clock is when they're going to take those shots. During the main course of the game, the main part of the game. The other time they're going to do it is if they fall behind. And you're going into New York, the transition I think is going to be there because you're also facing the team that gave up the most two-point shots. So you can get those in transition if you make it work. Drew Adams, again, he gave the most two-point shot or goals, but he also gave up the most two-point shots, or they saw the most two-point shots. So they're going to have to. New York is going to have to work on that. But if Boston is taking twos towards the end of the game because New York is winning, that's going to be tough. I just think that plays as well into New York's hand as it does into Boston's. So, you know, the two-point goal, is it a part of the game? Yes. Is it a part of your strategy? At times you want it to be, but at the same time there's times where you don't want to have to take the two, because for you know, in the fourth quarter, if you're forced to take twos, it's not because you're winning.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But the thing that I want to get down to the root of is the fact that there are certain teams that might be advantageous to take a little bit more impact on what they're doing as far as the two-point shot is concerned. Because you and I have both seen the fact that the two-point shot can be a game-changer. I mean, if you're up by one goal, obviously that's the most obvious point where it can be a huge impact. If you make a goal, like you're up by three or now you're up by one. But at the same time, one of these four teams is going to end up with having that type of situation. And so my question to you is, which team, not which individual, is going to be the most dangerous as far as being able to take advantage of a situation where they could possibly swing a game? Because that's the only way you can say it. Like, they're going to swing a one game situation by making a two-point shot. Where do you view all of these teams as having the players involved who could possibly make that two-point shot that's going to make or break their postseason?
Well, the two guys I look at in this game that are more than capable of doing that, and they're the two guys I'm going to say that why this isn't a trend. Why attacking strong in transition isn't a trend is because it's not easy to go out in this world and find a Scott Ratliff or a Kyle Hartzell. Those are two guys, two long sticks that are so much better with their stick skills and their shooting than just about all the other D-poles out there. There's other guys that can do it, but there's few that do it well. They're going to have an impact on this game. Kyle Hartzell is the current all-time scoring leader for a D-pole in a season. I believe he had 21 a couple of years ago with Ohio. That's the record for scoring by a long stick in a season. Right now, Ratliff has 20. He's 1 point away from taking or tying that record. A two-point goal gives him the record. So I think that it's not a factor. He's not thinking about it during a game, but it's something that we need to watch. And they've both been dynamic transition guys for both teams all along. And if Ratliff is running up and down the field and getting a chance to play some offense, getting a chance to get assists, get shots in this game, that really plays into Boston's hand.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain guys that you would think are going to make the impact. It's just a lot of these teams just seem to, like, have situational two-point goals. That's kind of interesting to me because I think that's the future of the game at some point in time, to have the sniper who can do that a la Jeremy Siebert. The next thing I want to talk to you about, Tom, and this is very near and dear to my heart, I guess, because I am obviously the Ohio Machine booster at this point. Which team do you expect to have, like, the biggest offensive impact? Because before we make our predictions and before we welcome in Chair McArdle here in a couple minutes, offensively, there are a bunch of teams who can make tremendous impacts in a game. I mean, you look at New York, you look at Ohio, you look at even Rochester, and Boston's kind of a team that kind of falls fourth. What do you see as the biggest hole offensively for some of these teams? Because in general, you can actually see holes in each team, which makes it a little more interesting just because it doesn't seem like there's a foolproof 100% winner like you saw the Denver Outlaws a couple of years ago, where they had the goalie, they had Schwartzman, they had a guy like Lee Zink. What exactly do you feel like is going to be the biggest roadblock for the top teams like New York or Ohio?
You know, it's kind of crazy because the second-best goal-scoring offense and the second-best goal-scoring defense are both out of the playoffs. Denver had the number two offense. Chesapeake had the number two defense. As far as goals per game allowed or goals scored per game. So it shows that with the different styles these teams have, you could see run-and-gun games. We could see a knockdown, drag-out where both teams go under 10. You know, we saw that game a couple weeks ago when you know, Boston was in a battle and neither team scored almost till halftime. So it's very possible for the right defense in the right situation to shut these teams down. But as far as whose offense is going to have the biggest impact, I mean, you're pointing back to the same two teams we just talked about. Ohio and New York can both score in bunches and score like crazy. I think it's fitting that if you look statistically, they have probably the two best faceoff men in heading into the playoffs, win percentage wise. Pascolgin has been on a tear as of late. He could be the rookie of the year, which is crazy because he has changed that team and that offense has come on and they're clicking. But New York is still, you know, possession for possession, the best offense in the league as far as goals scored. So they're still a dynamic team and can light it up.
Well, with that all being said, we do actually have our next guest, who we're extremely pumped to have back on the show. Kieran McArdle is with us now. And Kieran, for one thing, welcome to the show. How is the newly renovated off-season treatment?
Hey, guys, first of all, thanks for having me again. But, I mean, as you guys could see from watching the games, our past five games, we've just been clicking. And it took us a little while to get used to the style of our plays and everything like that. And then once we got used to playing with each other and we were moving off ball and we were working together, we really clicked all together. And it just was an awesome way to end off the season, even though we didn't make playoffs. But I think our future is very bright.
Yeah, I mean, you guys actually are a team that, I mean, not actually, but at the same point in time, like, you guys are a team full of offensive juggernauts, with yourself, the Thompsons, everybody involved. But for you specifically, at what point in time are you able to kind of compartmentalize being a part of the season, being, you know, 100% involved in the team, and to take a step back and realize the fact that you did so many individual things that should be commended? At what point in time do you kind of step back and kind of realize what your individual compliments are?
I mean, all those individual compliments I couldn't have done without my teammates. You know, it's a team sport, whether it's Manish winning the faceoffs or someone picking up a ground ball and getting us the possession, or someone feeding me or sending me a pick and moving off ball, and the defense coming up with a big stop, or the goalies coming up with a big save. So, you know, it's all that put together that got me to where I am, and the points that I've put up and the goals that I've scored and the assists and all that. So, I mean, it's a team sport. So without those guys, all these individual things would never have happened.
Well, with all these postseason, like, I'm going to keep on pressuring you about this, so you give me the answer that I need. But with all these postseason accomplishments, with all the awards coming up, how do you figure that your candidacy about the MVP and Offensive Player of the Year and stuff like that is going to be viewed? And kind of how do you manage exactly how that affects your psyche?
Well, I know that mostly the MVP, I mean, Casey didn't do it last year, but they like to see the most valuable player with the guy in the playoffs, as it should be. I mean, if you're the most valuable player in the league, your value to the team should bring you guys to the playoffs. So, you know, that's just something that the committee will have to decide. And I think all the guys in the runnings will deserve, whoever gets picked will deserve it. As far as the other awards go, and I mean, I hope that I put myself in a position where I could win one. You know, it's a great accomplishment, and it's something that you strive to get to in the off season. You put in all the hard work and everything, so you hope to hope the hard work pays off. Since we're out of it as a team, you know, you always want to win that championship. But then when you're out of it, you try to get the individual awards and stuff like that.
Now, one thing I do want to ask you about is the fact that it's kind of the most unannounced secret as far as this league is concerned. They're going to have expansion. And I think that your team is one of the teams that's going to be a big part of exactly how this is all going to work. Have you guys had any internal conversations about exactly how this is going to play out for a team that's so young and has so many players who should be protected, who might not be protected based off kind of how they're going to work everything? Have you guys had any conversations about everything?
No, we actually haven't. I mean, where we left off was Coach didn't know what to expect for next season. You know, he didn't know if we were going to get new ownership or whether he was still going to be the coach or whether there would be an expansion team or whether we could protect 12 guys or 20-something guys. He left it off with a lot of questions in the air, and those are questions that he doesn't even know. So we're all staying tuned to see what happens with the expansion teams and to see how many guys could be protected. But I think we have a solid core of guys in place that even if the expansion teams do take part, that those core guys will be back. And hopefully big things could happen next year.
Well, last one for me, man. I'll toss you back over to Tom. What was your favorite thing about this team? Because there's been a lot of young guys in Florida this past year, and you guys had the experience of a guy like Casey kind of hanging out. And so what was your best experience in the locker room?
I think just how we stayed together the whole year, whether that's on the field or off the field. You know, we're always having a good time off the field, whether that's, grabbing dinner the night before a game. You know, we do that as a team, then we have a good lunch, and we're just hanging out in the locker room. You know, we got some mini-lax games going in the locker room towards the end of the season, which was fun. And we were just having fun on and off the field. I mean, the last five games, we really stuck together as a team, and even though most of you kind of knew we were out without it being said, and then the last two games we knew we were definitely out, but we still never gave up. We never gave up the whole time, so that just shows a lot about our character and a lot about us as a team.
Hey, Kieran, it's Tom. Heck of a season. I know it didn't end the way you wanted, but your play was terrific.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
I'm going to hit you. James and I both like hypotheticals, so I'm going to give you another one. Middle of the off season, we're heading into the draft. Coach calls you and says, you know, Kieran, I'm sorry, I traded you for the number one overall pick. You get moved to one of the new teams, and they tell you they're going to build the offense around you. You're going to be the centerpiece. You're going to be the focal piece. You're going to be the guy. How many goals can you score in that offense?
As many as my team lets me. You know, you can't do it all on your own. It's a team spot of other guys working with you in the offense. So, I like to get my assist up for next season, being more of an assist guy too. So hopefully a little bit more balanced out. But whatever I could do to help my team, whether that's scoring goals or making assists or getting a ground ball, or a hustle play, whatever it is to help my team, I would like to do.
And we'll stick with the same line of questioning and say, if you could bring one teammate with you to a new team, or if you got to keep one that wasn't going to leave, who's it going to be?
I would have to stick with Lyle. He's the right-hand man, and guys can't slide off of him. So that opens up the field for me. And then when he's dodging, he's drawing slides like crazy. So that helps me get the ball off ball. So I would have to go with Lyle. He's just a complete player.
And you've had a ton of accomplishments from St. John's all the way through the pros. Now you're stepping in and getting into the MVP conversation. But when you play with a player like that, and I watched where he had his shot blocked this weekend, picked up the ground ball, and somehow magically was able to get it above his head and shoot and score. But do you ever see that from the field and just think, how did he do that?
Yeah, I mean, ever since watching him in college, you think that. And every time he goes out there, he still wows you. It's just awesome to see his style of play and his will to win and his passion for the game because that's in his bloodline and that's what he grew up doing, and that's what his ancestors and everything. So he grew up just knowing the game, and he leaves it all out there on the field every time he plays.
So you're in year two with Florida. You stepped up your points. You've gotten to know these guys. You've gotten a feel for the league and met a lot of the other guys. From watching games and having met him several times and seen some of the antics, what is it like being teammates with Queener?
It's fun. You know, you're always on your toes. You never know what's coming next. But, you know, he's in the locker room. He's just an awesome guy. He really keeps his team together, whether it's his speeches before the game or him screaming at the defense to make a better play or go harder. At his age and how long he's been in this league, his will to win and his passion for the game is something else. And you know, that's real inspiring for the guys on the team. And him going crazy just shows that he wants to win and he wants to be in the playoffs and he wants to win the championship and everything like that. So we get that as his teammates. So usually we just try to fuel off that and try to get the win.
The at his age thing might have been a conversation we should have had before the show. I'm older than he is, so I'm going to take a little offense to that. All right, your season's over, and we talked to Mike Bocklet a little bit ago, and now we're going to do the college football thing, have you be our guest analyst. Who are you looking at, and what are the strengths, and who are you taking this weekend?
I think I'm going to have to go with the Wizards. I mean, when you have Gremlin at the face-off X winning almost 80%, getting that high-powered offense, that many more possessions, that's real hard to stop. And so I'm going to have to go with the Wizards in that game. And then I like to take Ohio. I think they're real hot right now. Shriver's just an outstanding middie. His vision on the field and his shot is like nothing else. And they have Fitz in net, which is really holding them down at the defensive end. So that they're clicking at the right time and they're getting hot at the right time. So I like to see Ohio versus Lizards in the final with high powered offense, great battle at the faceoff X. And I think that will be an outstanding championship game.
And okay, so that's your championship. Now give me that matchup. Who are you taking in that game? and who's the MVP of that game if it happens the way you picked it?
Oh, God. I'm going to have to go with Ohio. I think they're real hot right now, and if they get out to a hot in the beginning of that game, I think they could they could win it. I think they'll have to control the face-off X as much as they can. But I think the MVP of that will definitely be Tom Shriver. You know, he's like the quarterback of that offense, even though he plays the midfield. I know you have Steele back there, which is really the quarterback, but the way Shriver dodges down the alley real hard and draws that slot and then finds the open man to take a good hard shot is really something special. And I think they're hot right now. New York's a little down from what they were in the beginning of the year. And I think Ohio carries that momentum all the way through.
All right. If all eight teams made the playoffs and you guys got another shot at continuing the season, which one of the four playoff teams would you want to play in round one and why?
I think we would have to go with Rochester. Out of the four teams in it right now?
Yep.
Okay, so, yeah, I would say Rochester. I mean, they're a great team, but we just came off a big win versus them. And we know if we kept our foot on the pedal that we would keep on going, and I feel that we match up pretty good versus them. So I'd have to say Rochester.
Well, Kieran, we most certainly thank you for being on. And as a friend of the show, I feel like by now we've interviewed you a couple times. We're rooting for you to get every award that you deserve, which is pretty much every single one of them. And hopefully everything goes well for you in the off season. Hey, man, by the way, I got to ask you, like, what are you doing in the off season? Like, are you holding any camps or anything crazy?
Yeah, I do some camps. I held a camp, an indoor one, over the winter. But right now I'm just traveling around doing helping out with camps, doing some guest appearances. I'm actually going to Jersey tomorrow, helping out Casey Powell at his camp. So right now just bobbing around from camp to camp, helping guys out. But hopefully next year I'll be starting my own camp in the summer.
Well, nice, man. If you need any help with anything, let either Tom or myself know, and we wish you the best of luck, and congratulations on a great season. Best of luck to you in the off season and everything like that, man. Like I said, we're really happy that you came on, and, I mean, the only thing we can say is best of luck moving forward.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's, once again, Kieran McArdle hanging out with us once again on the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. And you guys, this is going to be the most intense conversation that Tom and I have over the next couple of weeks, because we're going to give our predictions in the next couple minutes about who and what is going to win the MLL championship, because I feel like there's going to be a bet involved, or at least I hope there is, because I think I've got a team and I think Tom's got a team. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Tom, there's a game that involves your boys, the Rochester Rattlers, and there's a game involved with the team that I feel like you've been touting the entire way, the New York Lizards. So I think that, first off, before we get into the whole issue with playoffs, we need to get into predictions. And so, first off, I want to get your take on this game, because in my opinion, I think this is a game of a team that has kind of hit their peak, and a team that I don't think can get up to the level that the New York Lizards can get to. And I think that's the huge issue with this entire game. Because I don't think Rochester can get to the New York level, and I think New York's got it regardless of how they're playing, and I think this is kind of almost a detriment to New York. And I think that's the reason behind what I'm going to go ahead and view as my finals pick, is the fact that New York right now plays a team that I don't know if they can get to the level that they need to get to challenge New York enough to make them, I guess, scared of the next round. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think you know what I'm saying. Like, I just don't know if they can get to the competition level because of Rochester and LSU team. What's your viewpoint of this game?
You know, Boston makes me nervous because I don't know what they're capable of. I don't know how they would go in and beat New York in New York when, you know, New York has everything that they have. But New York has kind of let me down the last few weeks, and Boston has shown that they're going to take your best punch and stand there and say, I'm going to hit you or you can hit me again. So Boston is a dangerous team. And that's the thing, is because they are hot and cold, because they are hit and miss, because they are so dangerous when the ball bounces the right way for them, and they can outdo a lot of things against a lot of teams. These two teams haven't played in a long time, and both teams are very different from the last time they played. But Boston gave New York a fight early in the season, and Boston has added a lot since then. So I don't think I think this is a very good matchup, not just because of who it is and both teams have done so well, but because of the units that they have. New York has an edge at the faceoff, but both goalies about even. I know Drew Adams is probably the more storied goalie and the multiple-time goalie of the year, but, you know, at the same time, only one of these two goalies has a championship, and that's going to be Jordan Burke. Assuming Burke is the guy, again, we have a lot of unknowns with Boston, so there's question marks there. But at the same time, you know, they're dangerous. They're fun, and they're exciting, and they can run, and they can speed, and they can shoot the two, and they can pass it, and they can tic-tac-toe it. But they've got to figure out that third attack spot. Is Wells Stanwyck going to be the guy? Can Wells Stanwyck take a Brian Spallina check? Is he going to stand up to that? Is he going to shy away from that and lose the ball and drop it? you know, is New York going to shut down the middle of the field and not allow Davey Emelin to have these dunk goals that he has because they don't have the size in that attack unit, aside from Emelin, of a guy who's going to sell out and punish himself against a vicious Brian Spleen hit? I know that's what New York is telling their guys to do. The first time Wells touches the ball, punish him, because then he'll be tentative and back down the rest of the game. And so we've got to have them get in that mindset. And so I think New York is the favorite here, but I don't think it's a wide margin.
Well, in the other matchup, I mean, Tom, I need you to tell me why Ohio doesn't win, because at some point in time, Ohio is my prohibitive favorite. And I just don't know a way where they don't win this championship. I mean, them versus New York is, to me, an inevitable conclusion. What things about Ohio do you see that they wouldn't win this game?
You know, one of the last shows we had was between the two matchups. Rochester and Ohio played consecutive games. And you basically said that Rochester couldn't win – wasn't going to be there, wasn't going to be competitive, and it was going to get them out of the playoffs, and Denver or Chesapeake was going to take that spot. Rochester beat this team already. Rochester beat this team the last time they matched up. Not only did they beat them, but they beat them pretty easily. So I think you're misconstruing yourself or misspeaking if you think Rochester doesn't have a chance in this game. And as a matter of fact, I think this is the matchup that Rochester wanted. This is the team that Rochester wants to play, because I don't know how Ohio defends that two-man game. I think Ohio has them in just about every other aspect of the game at the field. But if Rochester goes into that Canadian mode, that Canadian style with Randy Stotts, Jordan McIntosh, Mark Matthews, Ohio doesn't have the guys to defend them. Dana Wilbur, Jackson Place, Ryan Farrell, Stephen Waldick, BK, tremendous. That's an awesome defense. Awesome. They are lightning. But Ohio's offense is based on speed. They're not a physical team. That plays into Rochester's hands. Ohio's defense is a great combination of everything, but they're not a pick and roll team. They're not designed to defend the pick and roll. They're not designed to stop the pick and pop. They're not designed to defend the razor cuts from behind. This is a far more intriguing matchup than the other one. But if you're Boston, you wanted to play New York. If you're Rochester, you wanted to play Ohio. So don't think Rochester doesn't belong in this game. Ohio is hot, but their last loss came to this team.
Well, tell you what, Tom. Gun to your head, which obviously we're doing this in the figurative term, but gun to your head.
I'm dying a Rattlers
fan. I know.
I'm planning on going to the game this weekend. I'm hoping to make the trip out on Friday. I'm hoping to go to the game at Selby and see Ohio play Rochester. And you know what? I'm dying a Rattlers fan. I don't care. You could tell me that they were 20 goal underdogs, and I'm still picking them. It's the way I'm built. I'm loyal to a fault. I love this Ohio team. I've got a ton of guys I know that play for it, guys that I talk to on a regular basis. And I know their PR guy, Noah. I know Coach Bear Davis. I've talked to them a couple times this week already. But you know what? If I'm going to this game, I'm wearing a Rattler shirt on the sideline. I'm rooting for the Rattlers, and I'm cheering for them the whole time. So gun to my head.
Oh, no gun to my head. God.
You knew the pick.
I didn't even ask you the question. Like, I just said gun to your head, and you went with Rochester immediately. Like, I was going to say gun to your head. Out of these four teams, who is your favorite? Because for me right now, it's Ohio. And that's the team that I think is the most well-equipped to withstand the New York barrage in an unfamiliar environment. Because both these teams are good at home. However, this championship that isn't played in New York, it's not played in Ohio, it's played somewhere else. And so for me right now, my I would take Ohio versus Field is how confident I am. And my question to you is, if I were to give you the Field versus Ohio, which one do you want to take? And if you're going to take the Field, I think there needs to be a small bet to be associated with this.
Oh, I'm ready for the bet, because in that situation, I'm already picking Rochester to beat Ohio, but if you're giving me Rochester and then the winner of New York, Boston, I'm definitely taking that, because Ohio's a great team. They've got a ton of talent. They've got they're hot. They've got the best defense and what has been the best offense the second half of the season. But, again, even when it was Tiger Woods versus the Field years ago and he was a lock, you still took the Field, because – There's that uncertainty, that unknown, and you got too many other options.
Well, tell you what, we're gonna work this out later on, but I'll take in one game, I will take Ohio and then whoever you don't want to take in the other game to win the championship. And I think we can work out the details later on Twitter. You can follow you at Bobby Lax, me at Inside CLT Sports, and we're gonna figure this whole thing out, but at some point in time, man, like this has to be going on. And my big thing is, like, do you have any qualifications for an underdog winning a championship, or do you really envision it being New York and Ohio at some point?
You know, I think that's the most likely outcome is a New York versus Ohio. There's a reason these teams were the number one and number two seed, but I don't know the last time we saw the number one seed win the championship in MLL. I don't remember that. So to say that the top seed is the favorite, okay, it's a little different now because we have a home playoff game in the semis and a week in between the semi and the championship. There's a little difference there now. But at the same time, you ain't the favorite until you win.
Well, one thing that's going to be interesting is the fact that these games now mean a lot more to teams than we've ever seen, because there's a different playoff structure, and there's also a different level of competition, and that's pretty much going to do it for us tonight, because I think that at some point in time, when these teams match up, we're going to come back and we're going to figure out exactly what's going on. So for Tom, I'm James. And for everyone who needs to tune into all of their postseason lacrosse needs, tune to laxdirt.com. And we're looking forward to talking to you guys next week. Same time next Monday, 8 p.m. We're looking forward to exactly what we have going on, because it's going to be really exciting. That much cannot be debated. But either way, thanks for everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. And thanks again.